Central Oregon's own Angel of Death. Today I'm going to finish telling you the story about a Central Oregon school teacher who was probably Oregon's first serial killer. Oddly enough, this gentleman just happened to be handy at the scene of several high-profile murder cases in Lake County, Oregon. And there weren't that many murder cases in Lake County, Oregon. Most of us haven't been at the scene of a single one. What are the odds of being at 5 or 6? Well, I'll finish telling you about the Angel of Death in just a minute, but first I want to introduce myself. My name is Finn J.D. John, and I write a weekly newspaper column that runs in about a dozen newspapers around the state called Offbeat Oregon History. I started the column in 2008, and writing at a rate of one a week, we're up to about 175 archive stories in the kitty. So what you're listening to right now is a story from those archives. I serve up a new one on the RSS feeds every morning at about 6 o'clock a.m. Stories in Offbeat Oregon History tell the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghaied sailors and Skid Road bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. And most of all, what we love to find is stories that have been forgotten. So today's episode was first published in the newspapers on September 12th, 2011. And I'm going to read it to you now. The lead teleplay writer for the classic CBS TV show Murder, She Wrote is a gentleman named Thomas B. Sawyer, who actually wrote a textbook that I use in one of my classes. Tom says that writers on the show used to affectionately refer to its lead character as the, quote, Angel of Death. You see, week after week, the kindly and inquisitive Jessica Fletcher, played, of course, by the inimitable and always fabulous Angela Lansbury, just happened to be on hand when someone was murdered, and week after week she played a key and sometimes heroic role in the investigation and apprehension of said murderer. By the end of the series, she had just happened to be in the right place at the right time to help out with a whopping 264 episodes worth of deadly skullduggery. Central Oregon had its own version of the Angel of Death in the form of Professor Ray Van Buren Jackson. His record wasn't as good as Jessica's. He played a starring role in only 3 oddly similar homicides and had bit parts in 3 more. His record is worse in another way, too. None of the murders he actually helped in the investigation of were ever really solved. Lake County historian and journalist Melanie Tupper is the scholar who identified this pattern during 7 years of research through back issues of local newspapers and courthouse records, along with interviews with locals. The whole story is in her book, The Sandy Knoll Murder, published in 2010 by Central Oregon Books. I highly recommend it, but you may have trouble finding it because booksellers frequently miscategorize it as a murder mystery, which it's not. It's most definitely historical nonfiction. Well, here, as briefly as I can make it, is a synopsis of Jackson's record as Central Oregon's Angel of Death. Rest in peace. J. Creed Conn. March 4th, 1904. John Creed Conn, a prominent Silver Lake merchant and owner of a mule team freighting line, disappeared on a frosty morning while going to fetch the mail for his store. 7 weeks later, after an extensive manhunt, his well-preserved body was found staged on a little hillock, the Sandy Knoll, on a nearby cattle ranch, put there in an apparent attempt to suggest that one of the ranch's cowboys had done it. Before planting the body, the killer beat the face to unrecognizability and shot it a second time using an old Colt 38 he'd stolen from Conn's store. The coroner's jury, apparently concerned to protect the cattle ranch from bad publicity, ruled it a suicide, something very few people bought given how difficult it is to shoot oneself twice with a single-action revolver and then beat one's own face to a bloody pulp. Other circumstances were also suspicious. Conn, at the time of his death, was trying to figure out what on earth had happened to the proceeds of a $3,000 loan that was missing from his bank account. This missing money was never found, and Conn's brother had to pay the loan off with the proceeds of his liquidated estate. Jackson ate breakfast with Conn on the morning of his murder, and was the last person to have spoken with him. As an important witness to Conn's last activities, he provided key testimony to law enforcement on what he said and where he went after breakfast, and also gave detailed information for newspaper stories. Jackson also knew about the $3,000 loan which Kahn had taken out, and Jackson was a convicted and highly accomplished forger. Could it be he forged a promissory note to steal the $3,000? Kahn would have asked the bank to send him the note back, and upon receiving it, he would have instantly seen what had happened. Paid to the order of Ray Van Buren Jackson, or something like that. Could Jackson have then asked to meet with him privately so he could give back the money and then given him something else instead? Well, we'll never know for sure. But it sure holds together as a story, doesn't it? And get this, Jackson bought about $3,000 worth of cattle right after Kahn disappeared. He sure didn't finance that purchase on a schoolteacher's salary. Rest in peace. Zelma Ethel Martin, April 1st, 1904. Just a few weeks after Creed Kahn vanished, Ethel Martin, an 11-year-old schoolgirl, stayed late at the schoolhouse where Jackson was the teacher. A half hour after arriving home that afternoon, she died of apparent poisoning. Her death was ruled accidental. There was some strychnine nearby, and it was believed she'd eaten some. But strychnine is very bitter, and no 11-year-old would eat it on purpose. Moreover, it kills in hours, not minutes. Tupper argues she more likely ate something laced with a more subtle poison, such as arsenic, at the schoolhouse. Possibly after discovering something related to Kahn's body, which, if Jackson was the killer, would probably have been stored there. Rest in peace. Julius Wallende, December 27th, 1907. Julius Wallende was a young homesteader, just getting started, new to Silver Lake. There is no clear connection to Jackson except for some spooky similarities to the Kahn murder. Wallende was shot to death, then the killer warehoused the body for 11 weeks before beating the face to unrecognizability and planting the body in a creek where near where Kahn was found, artistically arranging it so that it would freeze into the ice face up. The killer then communicated prolifically to the press, writing an anonymous letter to the Portland Oregonian to help guide searchers to the body, and after a suspect was wrongly identified, another anonymous letter giving details of how to find him. Rest in peace. Emma Dobkins, March 2nd, 1910. Officially, Emma Dobkins died of angina pectoris in Lane County. However, Lake County residents said she committed suicide after a, quote, tainted relationship with Jackson, who was a great pal of her brother Frank. She may very well have died naturally in childbirth while trying to deliver a baby conceived with Jackson, but angina pectoris, chest pain, is a strange thing to list as a cause of death, especially for a woman under 30. But well-meaning people tried to protect her reputation afterward by being vague on the documentation, so it's hard to know for sure how she died or what, if any, role Jackson might have played in her death, beyond having apparently gotten her pregnant. Rest in peace. Harold Bradley, December 29th, 1925. Harold Bradley was a hired hand on Lincoln Hutton's large and successful ranch. He was shot twice with a .30-30 while going with Hutton to work on a car. Link Hutton's wife, Leona, testified that after the first shot, she heard him yell, "Link, you've shot me!" Jackson, a neighbor, testified in the subsequent murder trial that Link came to his place and confessed to him. Link was acquitted, so apparently the jury didn't believe it. There is some evidence that Jackson and Leona Hutton were having an affair at the time. Could Jackson have planned to shoot Hutton and frame Bradley and then move in with the widow? Hutton and Bradley were built similarly, and there wasn't much light. Perhaps that bullet was meant for Hutton. By the way, Bradley's wounds were survivable, but he did not survive them. Perhaps this is explained by the fact that he was left alone with Jackson for an hour after the shooting. Rest in peace. Ira Bradley, May 1st, 1930. Ira Bradley was Harold Bradley's father. He was found beaten to death with the butt of a revolver at his ranch, a mile and a half from the Harney County line. His face, too, was beaten to unrecognizability. The killer planted evidence at a neighbor's house, but the neighbor had an alibi. He was in town buying a new Ford when it happened. Luckily, another neighbor was on hand. This neighbor helpfully called the Harney County authorities, forgetting, apparently, which county he lived in. Harney County officers came and checked out the crime scene, loaded up the body, and took it to Burns, and then discovered it was Lake County's case. In the ensuing confusion, much footprint evidence was lost, and the killer was never identified. But yes, by now you know exactly who that helpful neighbor was. Rest in peace, Professor Ray Van Buren Jackson, February 1st, 1938. Jackson was found dead in an upstairs room of his house, having apparently shot himself with a .30-30. Oddly enough, he chose to shoot himself in the chest, not the head, using a stove poker to actuate the trigger. He was 68 years old. One particularly odd thing about Jackson's record of helpfulness is that this list covers a significant slice of all the murders and suspicious death cases in Lake County from 1899 to 1930. There were others, but this list hits the high points and then some. Each time there was some connection to Ray V.B. Jackson. Indeed, in most of them, Jackson was a central player. What are the odds? In her book, Tupper makes the case that Jackson was a sociopath and serial killer in an age that didn't really know what either of those things was. She's probably right. He displayed some of the characteristics that we associate with sociopaths: glibness, absolute lack of social fear, impulse toward grandiosity, promiscuity. One of his nicknames was Tomcat Jackson, by the way. But you don't have to buy her argument about that to see that there was something funny and deadly about this particular man. He was an easy liar, a great actor, an accomplished forger, and a serial embezzler, among other things. He was entrusted with the entire community's school children for a decade, and at least one of them died under suspicious circumstances right after coming home from school. And nearly every time there was a brutal, suspicious homicide somewhere in Oregon's third largest county, he just happened to be on hand, helping out, giving advice, talking excitedly to the cops and to the press. The pattern is hard to miss, isn't it? Tupper is currently working on a follow-up book based on additional research into Jackson, which she's conducting now. She suspects he killed other people as well. That's it for today. You can check out all the columns and subscribe to either RSS feed by going to www.offbeatoregon.com. Both of the Offbeat Oregon Du Jour feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a tablet or a netbook or even an old-fashioned computer. Everything here is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening. Drop me a line anytime at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon, especially if you're going to be in the Corvallis area and have time for a cup of coffee. I'll be back tomorrow morning around 6 a.m. with the next episode, and until then, well, happy trails.